I would say if I had to sum him up into like three philosophies, it was treat everyone like family, which is the number one philosophy that we have at Sweet Basil, and helping your community, another one of our core values. And then just, this isn't what we're about, but for him, it was just being outdoors and foraging and fishing for your food, capturing your own food. And I think that kind of encompasses like a lot of Midwestern values, though. You know, there's a lot of people in the Midwest who hunt and they fish and they forage. So I feel like he was a Midwestern dude at heart.
Hello and welcome to Food Crush, the On Milwaukee podcast for people who eat. As always, I am your co-host, Matt Miller, culture editor at onmilwaukee.com. And I am joined, as always, by Lori Frederick, dining editor at onmilwaukee.com. How are you doing today, Lori?
I'm doing great. It's a good Monday.
Yeah. You are listening to this in January, but we are recording this in a week away from Christmas. Yeah. There is a blizzard allegedly on its way.
And
we'll see if it's a real blizzard or if it's just a media blizzard. It's two very different things.
We could use some snow though, because we have we've had very little snow. Yeah.
Oh no. I've been able to have normal commutes and drive comfortably to work without stressing out about sliding out and losing control of my vehicle. Oh no, what a terrible winter it's been.
You have such an optimistic view of everything.
I am the one who is enjoying our weather right now. I think this is wonderful. I don't think it's wonderful. 30 degrees is too cold. But let's not talk about the weather.
Let's not.
That's no fun. Let's talk about delicious food.
Yes.
Let's talk about delicious food. And we have not one, but two guests to talk about delicious food with us.
And we have returning guests, but we've never had them on the podcast together. And I think this will make for I think people will really enjoy kind of the story behind all of this. So we're here with Victoria Sithi from Sweet Basil and Alex Hanasakta of SapSap. Alex, did I say your name right? I'm always doubting myself.
You nailed it.
Okay,
good.
I always doubt myself.
Lori, don't doubt yourself. You're a good podcast host.
So, I'm good at spelling people's names correctly, not necessarily saying them out loud. So, but we have both of them here today to talk about kind of a recent collaborative pop-up that they did. Which kind of, like, I don't know, it goes way back. They have a big, long family history, and I'm kind of excited. I don't even know the half of what we're going to talk about today. So, hi, guys.
Well, hi.
Well, and I just need to give Victoria a shout out, because I do need to say Sweet Basil got me through the pandemic.
Oh, Matt, that's amazing.
And I regularly, it was a weekly visit for me and my family. We got Sweet Basil pilled. So thank you for
and you were living by your parents for a while in there.
That was a big part of it. It was in Hales Corners, and it was like, I don't know. Can't eat the same takeout all the time.
It's okay to admit you have a Sweet Basil addiction. We do have a support group for that.
The first step is knowing you have a problem. And this is important for me to note. Alex, I just want to tell you as well. I made the long drive out to your neck of the woods. I think it was an hour away one day. And I went all the way out there because I needed your food, and it was delicious. It lived up to expectations. So I want to, first of all, just thank you both for making delicious food.
Because SapSap's not far. You're welcome. But SapSap's in Racine, Sweet Basil's in Franklin. They're probably closer together,
And listen, it was worth the drive. If I'm going to drive somewhere to get food.
Absolutely.
I have not driven that far for anything ever. Thank you for that, Alex.
I'm kind of excited. I mean, and Alex, you can let me know. But Racine's food scene has been gradually kind of growing. I mean, I think you've really contributed
the food Racine
to that. I don't know. I think the area has a ways to go in terms of, you know, kind of a diverse, yeah, a diversity to the extent that Milwaukee has. But I've been kind of impressed.
Yeah, Racine is an interesting city. I mean, it's hard for us at times because I feel like that city is kind of stuck in the 90s still. I mean, when we first opened, everyone was excited. So we were doing really good in business. I mean, right now it's okay. It's just our location is kind of difficult for people.
In terms
to
remember kind of, you know, you are.
Racine is like a meat and potatoes kind of city too. So anything we try to do different, it's more of a destination spot sometimes rather than like a local spot. But yeah, I mean, we're hammering. We're doing good.
Yeah, yeah. And you guys opened your brick and mortar because you were a pop-up for a long time. Well, it feels like forever.
Yeah.
And you guys opened this year, earlier. And I'm trying to think.
Last year.
The end of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Oh, so you've had a year under your belt at this point.
Nice. Happy 1 year, Alex.
Yeah. Confetti. Yeah. Confetti.
Happy restaurant anniversary.
We survived, so that's good.
Yeah. So just for the sake of folks who are listening, who might not have heard past episodes or not familiar with what you do, can you guys just each take a turn kind of just talking a little bit about what each of you do, like what your restaurants do?
I can go first, Alex. Hi, everyone. I'm Victoria. Victoria Sippy, co-founder of Sweet Basil MKE. We are a Thai and Laotian restaurant with a focus on street-style food, reminiscent of the night markets and street vendors in Asia. So every Tuesday through Saturday, we're serving up a variety of street eats and classic dishes. So we have skewers and noodles, and the classic dishes include things like curries and fried rice. But there's also a few Midwest Asian fusion items on our menu, such as buffalo chicken rangoons, caramel apple egg rolls, and the entire menu is an homage to my family's origins, but it also honors our home here in the Midwest. And, we're located in Franklin, right by 27th Street and College Avenue.
Right next to a liquor store. So
yes.
If you're ever looking for a night in, there's one-stop shopping right there.
It really is.
And you guys do have a small dining room.
Yes.
But you opened during the pandemic and kind of with it, like you're really, really good at the carry out game. But folks have choices now, you know, whether they want to stay.
Yeah, you're my favorite restaurant I've never technically set foot in. I've exclusively thus far done the takeout. It's just like one of these times I need to actually like sit down and like enjoy a meal.
Yeah. We'd be happy to have you. And it's cool. I feel like that's what I think was a secret blessing in disguise, is that because of the pandemic, we were able to like hone our takeout to be really, really good, because that was our first impression that a lot of people had. So I think, I'm really glad that you guys said that, because we really tried hard to have our takeout be, you know, really good and higher quality than most. So that means a lot.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are some places where you can carry out and take it across town, and everything is still, you know, it's good when you get to the other side. And that's always, you know, I try to treat my carry out carefully as it is, but so.
Do you like buckle it in too in the car?
So, no, but I carry an insulated bag so everything stays
hot. Ooh, that's fancy,
you know, so like, and I pull out all the cold stuff, you know, like especially in the winter, hot stuff goes in the bag, cold stuff sits on the seat. So
that is awesome.
Lori is a whole system. I just put it on my chair.
This is also part of the reason why I don't order delivery, because there's never been a delivery person who can deliver my food as best.
Better than you.
I can be as lazy as I want, and I still want my food to be hot. So anyway.
That's awesome.
And then Alex, for you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm Alex Hanasakta, owner of Sap Sap, based here in Racine, Wisconsin. We ultimately started off as, you know, doing private dinners, specialty events. And when COVID hit, we were about to open at Crossroads Collective. And right when we started our pop-up, our weekly pop-up to test the waters, that's when COVID hit.
we were in your space. We did.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
We did the mukbang.
Yeah. Okay. I forgot right. about that.
Thing. That and was, it was one of those like, things where we went, and the next day, I think, the world, or within the next couple of days at least, the world just shut down.
We were sitting in Crossroads Collective being like, hey, weird news going around. I'm sure it'll blow over, right? Anyways, right, moving right. on. Yeah, surely the world will not be a different place.
So yours was the last food I think I ate before the world shut down.
Great, it was a great final meal.
Absolutely.
That was a weird day. I mean, you guys were there. And shortly after that, we were kind of like, we had no idea what the hell was going to happen to us, how we were going to proceed as a business. And we had a rental kitchen in Racine where we did all our pop-ups. And I just, I had the idea of doing carry out to see how that would go over. And, I put it out there. We did our first week and I was just amazed on the turnout. I was like, holy crap, like we sold out of all our food. And I'm like, this could be our next thing, So we were doing carry out for a while. And that led to us kind of using our Burlington and Milwaukee network to do kind of pop-ups out there at Lucky Ginger and the coffee house in Burlington. So ultimately we just became like this rotating pop-up, kitchen takeover, business / restaurant. And that was working really well for us. And everyone kind of just like really wanted us to open a restaurant. And I kind of was like hesitant at first. Ultimately we were doing so well with our pop-ups. I'm like, maybe this is the time to open our own restaurant. So we have our own space. And we opened our restaurant last year. It was freaking crazy. I never opened a restaurant before. So we definitely learned a lot. People missed our food in Burlington and Milwaukee. So the collaboration with Sweet Basil was awesome. Like, hey, let's get back to Milwaukee. And we did our first one yesterday.
Let's talk about
what you serve at Thumbs Up.
That's true.
And then kind of what you guys
so together. I've been talking with Vicky, my cousins, for a while and trying to figure out, like, we've always been talking about doing a collaboration, but it never came to fruition. Me and Vicky one day was like, screw it, let's choose a date and make it happen. But the focus for what I wanted to do was really just bring back our most popular items that do very well in Milwaukee, which is like the Lao style barbecue, the grilled, like Hobart. What else did we do? We did steaks, ribs. Yeah, really meat heavy, right? With sticky rice. So just really just like unpretentious eating with your hands, kind of like barbecue style food. And then I let Vicky and her mother kind of do what they wanted to do, which was like, was on the menu again, Vicky?
We had a lot of the Stop usuals. So like a lot of the grilled meats, the steak and the ribs are always a big hit, the chicken. But then Alex has this famous like fried chicken banh mi sandwich. That's like as big as your head.
He hates, but everyone else loves.
Yeah. So we definitely had that.
Why do you hate that? Is it the process of making it that you hate? Or
it's,
what?
It's believe it or not, like it's the most tedious like menu item because we do all our own pickling. A lot of components go into building it. You got to butter buns, you got to pickle everything yourself, you got to fry the chicken, you got to make wet batter, you got to get the dry batter. It's a lot. I mean,
you don't want a fried chicken restaurant.
No, oh, hell no. I'm good. Yeah. But like, it was funny because I was like, when we were planning the menu, I'm like, Vicky, I don't want to do this chicken sandwich. And she's like, well, it is one of your best sellers. So I was like, okay, you know what? You're right. We'll just keep the damn thing on.
And I'm going to take bets you sold out.
Yeah.
Sure enough. Sold out twice. It actually sold out twice during pre-ordering. And when it first sold out, Alex was like surprised. He was like, "It sold out?" And I was like, "Are you really surprised?" And he's like, "All right, well, I guess we're adding double the quantity. So put it back on the menu." And then we put it back on and it sold out again. And I was like, "We're not putting it back on a third time because that's just a lot of work." I know it's a lot of work for you guys.
The nature with these pop-ups too is like sometimes our accounts get off because of our POS system.
Yeah.
And we somehow we oversold and we had to like rush to grab more buns and more breasts and break down, you know. But yeah, that sold out last night, right, Vicky?
Yeah. Yeah, we sold out.
Damn the public making you make the sandwich forever.
And I was going to say, and I refuse to feel sorry about a sellout, right? Because that's a good thing.
It is.
We were in good hands though, because we had Nathan Heck from Hot Dish.
Yeah.
Nice.
Help us out. That guy's he's amazing in the kitchen. Like
he's
a good person.
And the nicest people.
He didn't even want to take pay.
Yeah.
And I was like, "No, we're paying you, dude." He's like, "No, I just want food and friends."
It's like, okay. And the whole team was awesome. Nate was amazing. And then Chef B from our team at Sweet Basil. And then you guys had Axel from Sap Sap. The whole team just crushed it.
Yeah.
So you guys, obviously, you know, you're cousins, so you've known each other for quite some time. But and you both kind of have a shared mission and to share your passion and knowledge, you know, of the food of Laos. And I think that stems from family and tradition and all of that.
Were you close before all the restaurants and all that stuff? Like how close of cousins are you? Because I know I've got cousins that I don't talk to anybody.
That's true.
It's weird, right? Like we're not like technically cousins, but like if you grew up Lao and you're really close to the family, we just say cousins, auntie.
Oh, funny. So you're not cousins. You're like the aunts and uncles that I have in my family who are related. But I mean,
we're not blood.
They were cousins, always there.
But we grew up calling each other cousins, uncles, aunts. My dad and her grandpa were like best of friends in Laos. They fought in the war together.
Oh wow!
And oddly enough, you know, when the first wave of Lao refugees came here, you know, some people got put in France, Australia, California. I think Vicky's grandpa actually located in Texas first, right, Vicky?
You were actually just talking about this the other day, Alex. So he came to Hawaii first. He actually Honolulu first. Then he went to Houston, I believe, and then Wisconsin. And Alex was just talking the other day, like, when it started getting cold out, like, man, I really resent my family for settling in Wisconsin. Like, you're telling me I could have lived in Hawaii and you guys chose Wisconsin?
I was going to say, that's a disparate jump to go from even Texas to Wisconsin.
Yeah, right?
That's a pretty brutal change.
Yeah. It is a good decision in terms of cost of living. You do have the weather trade-off in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they reconnected in Wisconsin, you know, which is kind of crazy to me now because there's no internet, there's no social media to help you, you know, find lost loved ones or friends, right? So, you know, they reconnected in Wisconsin. And ever since I could remember, you know, we'd always go up to Milwaukee or they would come down to Burlington because my family lived like running the Fox River. So like they would always go fishing and just hang out together every weekend.
That's really cool. So you really did get to be family. I mean, whether it's, you know,
every weekend.
Like biological family or, you know, adopted family.
For sure.
Yeah. So talk about, you know, like Vicky, your grandfather.
My grandfather.
I'm assuming you knew him.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, is he still around?
He's not still around, no. He actually passed away about a year or two ago. And that was really hard on our family. He was very much the patriarch of our family, very much everything everything I knew came from him. He practically raised my siblings and I, and we attribute a lot of our success today to that man. His name was Prajal, and he was a multifaceted man. Like, you have this side of him who was like so cool in his youth. And I'm sure Alex can relate with his dad too, where he was a paratrooper in the military, like jumping out of planes and just doing the most, right? You know, so that was him in his youth. And then he met my grandma, and they had kids, and then they lived in the refugee camp after the war, which I'm sure is such a sharp contrast from going from this military career to living like in a shack with dirt floors. And then he immigrated to the U.S. And then there was this side of him that best tried to assimilate to the lifestyle here while still taking care of everyone. And I think he did good despite the language barrier, but I'm sure that that was very difficult for them at the time. But he was a sharp man. He, despite not being able to communicate in English very well, like what he lacked in that, he definitely made up for in his hospitality, in his style. Like, I just always remember my grandpa being like always dressed in a Sunday best, like slacks that had like the iron, like
the crease,
the and like the white dress shirt and like the navy colored suit. And he always had like the fancy pens in his jacket. And he was just a very, very good businessman. And he was a pillar in his community, always volunteering, always attending events, always socializing, always fundraising, always helping people. He volunteered at church and at the temple. And he always ended up being like the MC at a lot of like the community events. And he sang, he played instruments. Like, he really was the jack of all trades. And what we learned from him was that aspect of like treating everyone like family. He treated everyone like family, like neighbors, the fire department down the street, like random people pumping gas at the gas station. Like, he was making friends everywhere he went. And that's just who he was. Like, trying to feed everyone, trying to buy you a coffee. That's really who he was. And there's the side of him that, you know, bonded with Alex's dad, who loved to be outdoors, fishing, hunting, foraging in the woods. So when he wasn't dressed in a Sunday best, he was dressed in like blue Levi jeans with a flannel, with a collar, and just being in the woods, you know?
Yeah, my first experience with foraging was, you know, going fishing with my dad and her grandpa. We'd be driving somewhere, and next thing you know, they'd pull over. I'm like, what the hell are they doing? And they just walk out and like pick wild mustard greens and just like find like hen in the woods mushrooms. And for me, I'm like, are these even edible? Like, because I didn't know anything going up, you know? And it was insane how they knew what was edible in America versus Laos, right? For somehow, well,
how they knew where to pull over. Exactly. Know, like, oh, yeah. I mean, I know there's signs, and I know foragers are really, really good at identifying, like, right. Oh, that tree, that means there's this. But yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's hard. It's really hard. I remember like them trying to teach us growing up, and I just couldn't get it. And then actually now as an adult, I'm like resenting that myself, that I didn't try harder to learn more from them while they were still around. And my brother and I, we actually went to like a foray recently. We went to the fungi fair at the Polish Center like a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And they had like a foraging, like a group that got together. They went out into the woods and you attempted to forage for mushrooms and stuff like that. And it's really hard. So props to people who can do that, because that is a skill. I had trouble just like digging in the dirt and like trying to find things, because everything looks the same when you're out there. So it is a skill for sure. And I highly recommend people get into it, because I feel like it's a good skill to have.
Oh, for sure. For sure. So Alex, did you pick up on it any better?
I mean, I wouldn't trust me.
But good to know.
That's why I'm glad I'm friends with Mushroom Mike. I learned the pickling of stuff, right? Like the mustard greens we would always eat. But no, it was always fascinating. I just never like really, you know, paid that very close of attention. Like, looking back, I wish I would have, because that was just like an amazing rare skill set to have. But no, I wish I could have picked up on it more.
So food obviously played a massive role, but like, was there really this notion of like, restaurants will be in our future, like cooking for others. Like, was that something that seemed even feasible at any point, or even an idea? When did that kind of start coming to the fore for both of you?
Well, for me, it was like, it happened after my dad passed, right? Like, probably like a year before he got sick, I was really into like cooking and hosting and just kind of having my friends over and cooking for them. But when he passed, that was like kind of like a reflection of like, okay, like you are very similar to your dad. And I loved it. Like, I loved hosting. I loved feeding people. And Sap kind of birthed from like, you know, my parents' struggle. But more importantly, when my dad passed, that was definitely a big motivator to like tell his story through food.
Yeah, for me and my family, it was never like something that we had thought about prior. And even when Grandpa was around, it wasn't anything that we thought of doing. And I think it was really my mom's dream. She learned from Grandma and Grandpa the recipes and things like that, and was always in the kitchen with Grandma. And Grandpa was always teaching her how to do a lot of the fundamental stuff. He was a very like big proponent on like the rice. Like, rice was his jam. Like, it's something that you don't really think about, but he was such a stickler on the rice. Like, you had to make it perfectly. And that was like his foundation of like, this is how you make a good meal. Like, if the rice is messed up, you do not have a meal. So like, he taught us all of that. So even to this day,
what is the right way to make rice then?
There's like a washing process. Like, we wash our rice until the water runs clear. And that really, I think, is one of the main things. And then the rice to water ratio that you cook it with, there's an Asian method. I'm sure, Alex, you're probably familiar with this method too.
The finger method.
Yeah. Like, we don't use measuring cups. We literally like dip our finger in the water and like it kind of
see
helps
how deep
us.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I've
there's
heard about
that.
Yeah. There's the YouTube guy, the Uncle Roger guy. And he criticizes. Yeah. You must have seen these videos.
Uncle Roger. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he talks about, you know, what's the famous British one that he always makes fun of, but he's just always like, no, you don't, it's not ratios and stuff like that. It's you take your finger. Finger. That's all you need to do.
I actually have to like really break down that protocol for staff because they don't know that method. I'd rather have them like not screw it up.
I feel like loads of respect for sticky rice, because sticky rice is a process. You know, it's not like you just take the rice, you know, and boil it for 40 minutes. I mean, I don't know what I know. I mean, it's part of your day, you know, to make the sticky rice. And so I always joke, like, I would gladly pay anybody, you know, for this most humble of foods. But I love sticky rice. But there's definitely a journey. To get there.
It's so underrated, and I think a lot of people too, we don't blame people for not knowing how labor intensive a lot of this stuff is, but it's good to talk about. I think, like, I feel the same way, like when other people are like, oh my god, they're charging like $4 for sticky rice, that's ridiculous. I'm like, man, if only you knew.
Well, and once, and I don't know, I feel like once you try it, and once you actually try it and use it, you know, like as a vessel and are eating with your hands. I don't know how you go back to the other way, you know, with forks and spoons.
We need to come up with like a tagline, like one of those once you do this, you don't go back kind of things, but for sticky rice.
exactly. So your grandfather was really big into doing things right. And kind of learning, you know, from the foundations up. So,
yeah,
you know.
I would say if I had to sum him up into like three philosophies, it was treat everyone like family, which is the number one philosophy that we have at Sweet Basil, and helping your community, another one of our core values. And then just, this isn't what we're about, but for him, it was just being outdoors and foraging and fishing for your food, capturing your own food. And I think that kind of encompasses like a lot of Midwestern values, though. You know, there's a lot of people in the Midwest who hunt and they fish and they forage. So I feel like he was a Midwestern dude at heart.
So it's probably good, you know, that you ended up.
Yeah.
You know, where you ended
in
up.
In Wisconsin.
No, in all. Yeah. So was your grandfather and like Alex, your dad, were they your main, and was food your main connection, you know, to the Laos and to that history?
Yeah, I mean, my dad was very similar to Vicky's grandpa. I mean, they were best friends. They'd always, you know, a lot of Lao people live in the city, right? And mm-hmm. we actually lived in the country, had a big backyard. The river was right there. So, like, literally every weekend, the whole damn Lao community would come down to Burlington, Wisconsin, get a whole cow, get a butcher in the backyard, and they would just, you know, drink their Hennessy and eat some freshly killed steak with sticky ribs. literally, yeah, it was Vicky's grandpa coming down every weekend, my dad. And, yeah, her grandpa was really, how do I put him? Everything she just said, but he was really big on helping the community, helping getting other Lao refugees here. My father did the same as well. Like, he'd always help everyone get on their toes. My cousin Guy, which is Vicky's real cousin, but I call him cousin, it owns the international market on 35th Street.
Yeah.
My father brought, well, I'm not sure if my father brought them over or Vicky's grandpa did, but they stayed with us for a while. My dad helped him get his license, and it was just like a big community effort to like help other families get here, essentially, and help them out and help them acclimate, which is crazy to think about because they barely spoke English. They didn't know how to work their way around the system much. But whatever they can do to help other Lao refugees, they, you know, they would give their best effort for sure.
It was like crazy to think about how they came across like all of these ideas and like did so much for the community over like a meal. Like at these barbecues, they would brainstorm ideas and problem solve and talk about these plans to help other people over a meal. And it's crazy to think that like, they did this back then when we were like kids, and now as adults, Alex and I are doing the same thing. Like we're brainstorming ways that we can help our communities and feed people and do all this stuff over food, through our food.
Yeah. Well, and it's so interesting to me because you see this among, you know, I mean, I don't think most of us can even envision what it would be like to be a refugee, you know, and literally leave your home with, you know, as much as you can take with you, which usually isn't very much, you know, and start over completely, you know, in this place, you know, with communication barriers and everything. And then on top of it, you know, to be like, hey, this is where I am. Now I'm a part of this community and I'm going to give back to this community. But you see it everywhere, you know, I mean, community is huge. And I feel like so many people could take a lesson from that because that's kind of how the world works, right? Like, for we sure. should all be together in the same boat, you know, in our, you know, in our cities and our villages and our wherever we live, right? So
absolutely.
Yeah, that's what we did with Nate last night. We indoctrinated him, his family now. After a few shots of cognac,
I aspire to being a cousin someday.
So how much talking was there between the two of you as you were each kind of going your restaurant ways? Was there a lot of like kind of menu matching and being like, oh, you're doing that dish? Oh gosh, should we be doing that dish?
Not necessarily. For me, it was always, well, one thing that I really want to, you know, point out was I used to live with Vicky's mom years ago when I was living in Milwaukee, and in a place to stay. And she let me stay with them until I got on my feet, right? And she would always cook these meals. She was like, she does not get enough credit on how good of a cook she is, how she can control that whole kitchen. And she's like 4'2". She can outcook so many people, and it's insane what this lady can do, right? As far as like, you know, conflicting or menu ideas, no, it was always like, hey, like we're in this together. You guys do well, we do well. There's no competition between us at all. That's the question.
Yeah, are there dishes you make that have your own family spin? I mean, usually there are, but like something you can point to where you're like, you know.
I would say everything, like everything that everyone makes is like, yeah, I would say the recipes that we have at Sweet Basil are like our family's recipes. And then the recipes that Alex does are definitely like his family recipes. Every family has their own like version of the same recipes. And I was just telling Nate this yesterday too, because he, him and Axel, they tried our cucumber salad. And I had asked them, like, have you guys had this before? And they were like, I've had cucumber salad, but I haven't had your guys's. So there's people who, like, are able to say, like, I've had this before, but I haven't had this version or, like, this restaurant's version. And it's so cool because I'm a huge person, and I'm sure Alex does the same thing too. Like, where everywhere you go, even though you've had that dish before, we want to try it there because that family or that restaurant can make it different. So, but even though, like, we have similar things, like yesterday Alex took a bunch of our food home and we took a bunch of his food home. It was like a food barter, and he's like, I don't want to eat any of my food. And I said the same thing. I was like, I don't want to eat any of Sweet Basil food. Like, let's swap, because we just want to try each other's food. And it's that thing where it's just different. It's the same food, but it's different. So
yeah,
what are the biggest differences you taste in one another's foods? Like,
this, for me, it's, you know, our menu is not really even like traditional, you know, besides some pop-up menus, but like, how do I put this? So Vicky, going back to like me not wanting to eat my food is because I want to eat traditional Lao food. We're not doing that on our menu. So I'm like, yeah, I'll take leftovers all day. As far as differences, I mean, it's just your take on things, how you spin them. I mean, usually our marinades are very similar, from, you know, our lemongrass chicken to our riblets that we were doing. We kind of use the same components, but like different, you know, we all have our little own like tricks and stuff and different styles when it comes to marinating. But yeah,
probably the levels or the proportions of ingredients, you know.
Yeah, the measurements. There is no
little bit, you know, something, you know, might be a little bit sweeter, a little bit more, you know, I don't know. There might be more.
It's like the Mean Girls clip. You know, the measurements do not exist. The measurements do not exist.
And I think this is what I love, though, about family-owned restaurants, is that they really are, you know, like, you can think you know a cuisine. And, you know, you can know the basics of a cuisine. But every time you go to a different restaurant, you know, you're going to find things you love. You're going to say, oh, I like that better over here. But I love that over there. And I sort of laugh because I think like, okay, what would be my perfect Lao meal, right? It's probably from four different places, you know, like dishes from like four different places, you know, which is kind of cool, but very impractical. So, yeah.
But that's kind of like what it's all about too, because growing up, we definitely had potlucks too. Like, we would have potluck style kind of things where each family would bring their own dish. And so it's not too impractical to want to have like a little dish from like everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just very impressed. There's no like sense of rivalry at all. It seems there's no sense of like, oh, they're not doing this right. That's not. Yeah. Like, I feel
trust me, my cousin, Vicky's mom, always like critiques my food.
Really?
But for all like the good reasons, because like I've learned to laugh from her. But like sometimes, like when they're negative, it's also like a sign of love. That's the way their love language is. But no, she's always like giving me tips. She's so underrated. I wish, you know. Have you guys met Vicky's mom?
I don't believe we have. But I'll have to put it on my bucket list.
We're just going to have to do a third podcast and bring her on. The trifecta.
You have to do her in person. Like, she's the most generous. She'll treat you like family. Like, as cliche as that sounds, she really will.
Well, Lori, if that might be your path into becoming a guns.
Yeah, you guys are welcome to visit anytime. And that goes for anyone. Like, if anyone wants to just come in and meet my mom, just ask for Chef Vanna and she'll come out. And like Alex said, she's like this 4 foot tall, just awesome woman. And she's a force to be reckoned with, but she is amazing. And she loves meeting people. So even if you're a customer or you guys, Matt, Lori, if you guys want to come in, or anybody listening to this podcast, like if you guys want to go in and give my mom a shout at Sweet Basil, just ask for Chef Anna. She'll come out when she has time and she'll say hello. And she loves meeting everyone.
So, well, now so, I have to dine awesome. In one of these times.
Yes! we'll set it up. Yeah, you guys have to come in and dine in. And like we'll have my mom there and she can present some like.
Vicky, could you imagine your mom meeting Derek Mosley? Derek Mosley came there breakdancing last night. I'm like, oh, I wish your mom was here. Like, what a
good so, that would well, be amazing. Fun. The height difference alone would be remarkable.
Yeah.
So, that'd be fun.
So I think you've gotten at this a little bit because you've talked about how your grandfathers and your dads, like the hospitality has definitely influenced like your work and all of that. Are there other things that just family or things that you want to carry forward? You know, like, I mean, whether it's for your kids or, you know, I don't know, the next generation.
For me, it's just like carrying on the food. My number one fear is that like our culture will cease to exist. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that, you know. I'm still learning even from my mom, from Alex, from everyone around us to carry on these recipes because I don't have them ingrained in my memory. And I can admit that, you know, and I feel like as long as we're continuing to bring awareness to new foods and everyone is learning about it and trying it, there's always going to be that demand or that it's always going to exist, you know, because then people will want to learn how to make it. Like we have customers who even email us and say like, hey, I really love your Penang curry. I'd love to make it at home. And even though I know I can't make it as well as you guys do, I just want to learn. And that just warms our heart. Like that makes us feel so honored. Like, wow, this person wants to learn how to make our Penang curry. That is so cool. And we'll give them the recipe. Like we don't gatekeep at all. Like we'll just email them back the recipe. Like, here's what you need. Let us know if you have any questions. Like we want people to learn how to do this. And I've told my mom too, like, mom, you should totally do a cooking class. I feel like that would be a huge hit, you know?
Yeah. Well, and we talk about all these methods. It's like, you know, the finger test for water levels and proportions for rice. And it's like, those are the things where if everybody doesn't learn them, they don't get passed down.
Yeah.
You know, and then you find yourself, you know, oh, I'm 30 years old and there's nobody to learn from, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking up a recipe, you know, for something that I grew up eating, you know, which is probably, that's not the ideal, right? Things do, they get lost that way.
Yeah, for sure. Tribal knowledge getting lost is a real fear of mine. But I think what we're doing, like, and what Alex is doing and what other restaurants who serve like Lao and Thai food are doing, I think we're hoping to keep that alive. So that's pretty cool to see.
Do you think that it's different for, I don't know, younger people whose families are from Laos or who are from Laos now than it has been in the past? I mean, I think, you know, there's obviously been a surge of awareness, I think, around the country in the U.S.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, like I said, it's awesome to see. And I think that goes back to what you were saying, Matt, like the fact that there really isn't like rivalry. Like we can go to, I've gone to like Madison and there's Lao restaurants out there and I'll like literally ask for the chef and be like, who are you? And like, we'll just like, you know, shoot the shit. Like we'll just talk to each other and hang out and I'll just be like, wow, like it's so cool. And like, there's all love and all support. And it's awesome because it goes back to that whole, like the more Lao restaurants that are out there, it's a win for like all of us, you know, like it makes us proud to see that there's like a Lao restaurant in like smaller towns or bigger cities or wherever. And so I think it's all encompassing for sure. I don't know if Alex feels the same way though. I'm sure he does to some extent.
Yeah, Vicky's just a better speaker than me, so I'm co-signing everything she's saying right now for sure. Yeah, so no, that's what it's about for me, you know, meeting other Lao chefs through food, just sharing our stories. We're doing a pop-up actually with Chef Jamie. She's Lao. She owns a restaurant called Ahan in Madison. Mm-hmm. She was a Tori Miller sous chef, and she kind of just kind of ventured off and opened up her own place. And that was, you know, that was exactly what Vicky said, was connecting with other like Lao chefs and, you know, working with them. Yeah, I get excited, you know, like, oh, there's another Lao chef killing it out here. Like, I want to meet them and work with them, you know?
Yeah. I hope that answers your question, Lori.
No, I really think it does. And I think it's that sense of community that I guess I've seen too, just from the outside. You know, folks are never digging on other people, you know. And in fact, people are usually and often working together, which I think is cool because everybody is going to take a different bit, you know, from their family or from recipes or from, you know, looking at how to recreate a dish.
Yeah.
You know, in a completely different country too. You know, I mean, because there are definitely differences in ingredients, despite being a really global society. You know, things taste different. You know, you travel across the world and something that was grown in Asian soil is not the same, you know, as something grown here. So I think it's cool that folks are putting the emphasis on, you know, keeping all of those cultural components alive.
For sure.
And obviously, I look at the whole world, like, through the lens of food. But that food connects to so many other elements.
Yeah. And that's not to say, though, that we wouldn't collaborate with anyone outside of Lao food. Like, Alex and I have been talking about collaborating with, like, other people. Like, you've done collabs with Jason from Heaven's Table Barbecue. So we've done they've done that. And then we've done like our pizza pop-up last winter where we kind of combined like the pizza side with the Thai side of things. And so we're always looking to collab even with cuisine outside of Lao food and like coming together. Cause I mean, that's what we do anyways at Sweet Basil and Sap Sap between his fried chicken sandwich and our like buffalo chicken rangoons. Like, there's room for innovation on top of the classics or on top of the traditional.
Yeah. I love that too, because there's this sort of tendency, I think, when you're older, you know, you want things to be like traditional. You know, I mean, then this is that sort of thing that carries on through the ages. You know, our grandparents, you know, want to eat, you know, the original dish, you know, and meanwhile, all the grandkids are like, yeah, and I want to mix it with that thing I had the other day. You know, but that really reflects, I mean, that really reflects kind of, you know, cuisines evolve, right? And they evolve based on the people that cook them. So,
yeah.
So do you see anything ahead? Like, is there a modern Lao cuisine, like, in the U.S. that's developing kind of side by side with the, you know, awareness of the culture and the food in general?
Yeah, we actually have friends, Mark and Melissa. They are a duo, they're photographers, and they own Siege. And they've been collaborating with this restaurant down in Illinois called Nakorn, and they are doing modern Lao food, modern Thai food. And it is so cool. I'm looking at these pictures and I'm just like, whoa, this is brand new. Like, my brain cannot comprehend what I'm seeing in these pictures, because they're taking like classic Lao and Thai dishes and they're putting this modern twist on it. And the presentation is just absolutely beautiful. And just the execution is just like chef's kiss. Like, it's so crazy. And so it's kind of cool that things like that are happening in the food scene now.
Yeah. So, is there anything else? I
will say, it sounds like there's more of these pop-ups to come between you two.
Pop-ups are the best thing that's happened to the food world, by the way, I have to say. I mean,
I love that,
eating in regular restaurants and good restaurants, but I think pop-ups, like, I'm always sad that I can't go to all of them, because every single pop-up, like, everybody's bringing something crazy, new, wild to the table, and you always eat something where you're like, ah, this is so good, and it's so much better because you'll never eat it again, probably. Like, you just can't have it. It's, you know.
Yeah, it's a great break from the kitchen too. You know, like just the daily grind of the kitchen. I always like pop-ups because like I'm cooking with my friends. We could be innovative. We don't have to have the same basic boring menu that we're so sick of, where we don't even like eat our own food. But no, again, yeah, it's super fun. It's super collaborative. And we can be creative and take a step away from the restaurant and have some fun.
Yeah. So do you guys have anything coming up kind of in the new year that you know of?
We talked about definitely redoing this pop-up again. We're going to meet and sort of hash out what worked, what didn't work, and move
Alex
forward.
Is going to say the fried chicken sandwich doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to be like, no, it can't be done.
Alex, you just got to look at the sandwich and tweak it. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Make it into a new thing. Maybe it'll be more fun then.
Yeah. We can do a deconstruct.
He's like, no, it's so bad.
Yeah.
Damn chicken.
Yes, I don't know. I hate that damn thing. But no, for me, it's we're doing, yeah, we've been talking about another one next month. For SAP, we have a pop up in Madison, as I said before, with Chef Jamie mm-hmm. from Mahan. So if anyone from Madison is listening, go check that out.
Well, and that's at their Madison.
Yeah, at the Borough.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we should ask the second, the most important question we ask every podcast, which is, where can people find you guys?
On social.
On both on the internet and in reality.
Yeah. In reality, Sweet Basil is located in Franklin, 6509 South 27th Street. Stop in, ask for Chef Vanna, ask for Chef B, ask for myself, and we'd be more than happy to take care of you guys. On social media, we are Sweet Basil MKE on Facebook and Instagram. Our Facebook and Instagram is where we post a lot of our specials and our collaborative events, such as the pop-ups. So if you're looking to stay in the know for the next pop-ups, definitely follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And then our website is sweetbasilmke.com, where you can take a look at our menu, read about my family, and you'll be able to find all of our social media links on there too.
Yeah. I just want to say too, if people are looking for a delicious dish to get from Sweet Basil, if they're looking for a recommendation, I'm always rolling with the chow pong fried rice.
Yes.
That is how I roll. It is delicious. So if you haven't had Sweet Basil before and you need a recommendation, boom, there you go.
Thanks, Matt.
Yes. And Alex?
Yeah, you can find us on social media.
You
can find us on Facebook at SAPSAP, website sapsapeats.com, or IG sapsapeats. And, no, one second. Our restaurant's located in Racine, Wisconsin. All the information is on our fan page. Don't ask for me because I'm on the line cooking.
he's not quite as Vicky's mom.
It's nothing against anyone, but you know, we're pretty short staffed right now. And,
That's fair.
And it's only fair for me to give some recommendations for SAPSAP as well. If you get a chance, you gotta eat one of the banh mi's. You gotta eat the charred pork, preferably. But also, if the beef jerky is ever on the menu at either Sweet Basil or SAPSAP,
oh, yeah,
it is a must get.
You should jump on
that. Like you need to hop on that if that is ever on the menu again. It is,
and you have to eat it at both places.
Yes,
it's slightly
obviously
different.
Everywhere I go, I'm
eating Lao beef jerky.
It is craveable in this sausages. Household, I will tell you.
So.
That's an idea for the next pop-up, Alex.
Yeah, for sure.
You notice I did not recommend the fried chicken sandwich because I care about you, Alex. I'm trying to be supportive.
You don't need help with that.
You're so kind, man. I appreciate that.
Fried chicken is just a thing right now. You know, like maybe, you know, a few years from now, nobody will ask you for that ever again.
I don't know. It's chicken. I think it'll always. I think that's going to be a forever one. Sorry. I think that trend isn't going away anytime soon. Be like a Wisconsinite being like, I think cheese curds, they'll go out of style. No one will want them.
So, But thank you. Thank you to both of you.
Yes, absolutely.
For sharing little bits and pieces of yourself and your families. And most of all, you know, for sharing.
Sharing your recipes.
You're sharing your food with everybody. Because that. Yeah.
No, thank you guys for having us. It's always a pleasure to be on the podcast with you guys.
You're two of the best in Southeast Wisconsin, so high fives.
And I'm hungry now.
Through the Zoom call, high fives.
High fives all around.
No, we appreciate it. Yes.
Can we thank you. You know what?
Oh, go ahead.
One question, one favor. Can we kind of redeem the mukbang? Can you guys do that at the next pop-up?
Oh, if we have to. Oh, gosh. twist my arm. No. Oh, no.
All right, that would be fun. So,
yes, be fun. I agree. That would, Lori?
Yeah. Yeah, no, definitely. I mean,
do not turn
we
this
need
down
to expunge all those weird menus, right? All those weird memories of, you know.
Yeah, we need a mukbang that doesn't end with "and then the world shut down." we need one with a slightly better ending than that.
Yeah,
we'll do one at the pop up. Okay. We'll get you guys in to dine in at Sweet Basil. We'll do a mukbang there, and we'll get all these things going.
Sounds good.
This is the best day of my life. Well, thank you all.
Thank you,
man.
Thank you guys.
Thank you so much.
All right.
That was an awesome conversation. And truly, I know I was talking a lot about their specific food and sounding real glowing about their food. That's because I am not BSing. Sweet Basil legitimately has become a staple in the Miller households, plural. Yeah. A month does not go by with at least one Sweet Basil visit. And I am not kidding as well. I drove down to Sap for some of their jerky and some of their egg rolls.
I've made a couple trips down. I have not been down. I will confess I have not been down since they opened the brick and mortar restaurant, but I was down when they were doing carry out in their commercial kitchen.
Yeah, I think that's when I went down as well.
It was worth it. I would drive to Racine.
That's the thing. If I'm going to drive 30 minutes to 45 minutes out of town for food, that better be damn good food. And let me tell you, it was damn good food. And you know what car smelled great that entire ride home? My car. Yeah. It was the best my car has ever smelled.
I didn't even get home. I got to like a park on the lake in Racine. And it was like a fall. I think it was in the fall. I don't remember. Anyway, it was a nice-ish day. Maybe a little cool. But yeah, my food got eaten on a park bench.
Yeah, it's outstanding stuff. And truly, the jiaobong noodles or fried rice, highly recommended Sweet Basil, especially if you like a little heat. Super good. And I cannot say this enough. I believe it is no longer on either menu right now, but when the beef jerky is on the menu at either of these places, you gotta snatch it up. It is gold. Yeah. It is meat gold.
Yes. Any delicious Lao restaurant you visit, the beef jerky and the Lao sausages, both of which are generally almost always made from a family recipe of some sort. And they're all just a little bit different, but they're amazing. Try them.
Yeah. honestly, everything's good. I'm just recommending the stuff I like, but
I was so glad that you went off and like just started randomly recommending things. I'm like, oh, I don't have to do that. That's so nice.
Well, and I think, you know, you go to a restaurant and sometimes it's easy to be intimidated by seeing a bunch of dishes you don't know. And this shouldn't be that intimidating. I mean, there's a lot of the stuff, you know, it's chicken sandwiches, it's barbecue, it's soups and stuff like that. It's fried rice dishes. No, I don't think there's much on here that, you know, should intimidate you. But it's easy just at any restaurant to look at a blank slate of a menu and be like, I don't know where should I start? Where do I begin here? So if I can give you that one piece, that jiaobong noodles or jiaobong fried rice to start, and you take that and run with it through the rest of the menu, then I will have done my job.
And if you decide to order other things, because that's what seems good, like, I mean, they often will steer toward the OG platter, which is nice because you will get to taste a ton of things. And especially if there's more than one of you, if there's at least two people, the OG platter is awesome. But also order, like, they have jiaobong, which is the hot sauce.
Yes.
You can order it separately.
And it's really good. It's
like
order slices of all of the
sauces and the sticky rice. And I just, anywhere you can find those things.
Yeah. The jiaobong is very similar. it's a little bit of like a spicier gochujang, I would say, in terms of flavor.
And thinner.
And thinner, yeah. It's not quite as tacky as gochujang.
And not as sweet.
Yeah, it's more heat than sweet, for sure. But it's got that kind of earthy...
But not overpoweringly.
No, it's spicy, an earthy usually. Heat. Yeah, I love it. That's my go-to, always. Speaking of things that we normally always do, this would normally be the time where we do a food porn, where we put on our best Al Green voices and sing and speak seductively about foods and read
read a poem as it
read poetry that makes food sound really good. And Lori gives me poems that I have big words that I can't pronounce right, and it's really mean. But we are going to transition out of food porn. We're going to find something else to put here at the end of episodes.
After 4 years, I think it's time.
We have not run out of writing, but we've gotten... Mm. The world is not out of good food writing, but we feel we may have run out of food writing.
This is AKA, Lori has run out of the desire to spend hours a week pouring through food things. I think it's time to shake it up.
We're going to put something new here
in October of 2023. This year will be a transition year. I don't know.
Yeah. We're letting go of childish things, as one does when they turn 5 years old. and we're going to put something new at the end of these podcasts. We haven't figured out what that is yet. We were thinking we might talk food shows on TV, mm-hmm. or we might talk... So it'll be food related, obviously.
Yeah, just some kind of recent recipes we've tried.
We're going to figure something out here for the end. But just know, no more food porn. But definitely keep going out there and read delicious writing. There's so much good stuff out there. And I'm not just talking about Lori, but you should obviously read Lori's food writing. Stay tuned. We'll be putting something else here. But something that is always going to be here, no matter what, is going to be me and Lori telling you where to find us on them social medias and on the internets. Lori, where can people find the Food Crush Podcast?
All you gotta do is look for Food Crush Pod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And where do people find you?
You can find me at A Man About Film on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And that's the end of the list of social media. I'm technically on Mastodon, but I do not use it. Mastodon is the worst. If there's one thing we've learned,
calling it Nastodon.
Yeah, because it is nasty.
It's terrible. I mean, I just can't. It's not the same.
All these companies, I feel a little bit like everyone just got like embarrassed. What was the? Was it Zoom? What was the previous? Face chat company that got totally usurped.
Snapchat?
No, like at the beginning of the
Snapchat
pandemic.
Is still around.
Yeah. But like,
everyone has
been waiting. Like, we've had forever for people to come up with fake, you know, Twitter, social medias, and no one's done it. And now people are fleeing Twitter and there's nowhere to go. Because let me tell you, Mastodon sucks. I tried, it sucks. Yeah. It's a bad social media site. It's Twitter minus the usability.
It's a bad substitute. It's like,
Yeah, and I don't want to resort to having to post everything on Facebook. The beauty of Twitter is that it's like little bites. Like it's a more bingeable thing, whereas Facebook is where I put more thoughtful thoughts.
But we need to stop talking about Twitter.
Twitter is. But first, before we stop talking about Twitter, Lori, where can people find you on Twitter and Instagram?
You can still
find
me on Twitter.
You can find both of us still on Twitter. You can find me on Mastodon. But don't bother.
Yeah. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I am still there. I am Low Frederick on all of the platforms, which makes it easy. And
it's a great way to keep up with all of her great food writing. She's the best food writer in Milwaukee. I say that with bias, but also with accuracy. It's an accurate bias.
Well, and Matt has impeccable tastes and opinions about.
Well, the upcoming bowl of SpaghettiOs I'm about to heat up would beg to differ with this idea that I have taste.
I did say in movies, film.
Okay. Sometimes I will allow that.
We don't always agree. SpaghettiOs are a pass. They're nostalgic.
Yeah. We are recording this after just before Christmas. So you're listening to this in January, but we're recording before Christmas. I'd love to ask, Lori, what is your go-to Christmas movie?
My go-to... okay, if I want something really funny and light, I love Elf. I cannot watch that without like beaming stars and moonlight out of my face, right? like something happens with that, and I don't know exactly what it is, but I love that. But I'm also kind of a big fan, and
your hesitation is bracing.
No, it's just, I'm blanking on the name of it.
Well, who's the
what
everything
is it? The bell rings, the angel gets its wings.
Miracle it's on 34th Street.
No. It is it?
Oh, It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
And honestly, like that was my mom's favorite Christmas movie, so I was exposed to it every year. But there was something about it and about the ending. I don't know. It stuck with me. So if I'm going to watch like an old classic,
like a serious movie, Christmas movie,
I will. Yeah. That's usually the one.
Well, now we know. Well, that's lovely.
How about you?
I am a Christmas. We are a Christmas Story household. That is always our go-to.
Oh, Christmas Stories. That's good too.
Yeah,
you know,
but I will say,
you know,
coming up the rear as a new favorite around Christmas is Muppet's Christmas Carol, which I think is a lovely version of the Christmas Carol that is as funny as you would hope it to be with the Muppets, but also really hits those Christmas Carol stories. I love it. I think the songs are lovely. I think it's got a childish glee to it, but also really hits the emotions when it needs to hit the emotions.
That was the Muppets when I was a kid. Everything you're describing about the Christmas Carol, the Muppets Christmas Carol, is what the Muppet Show felt like when I was a kid. Like, it was adult, so you could watch it and be amused, but it also had this sort of like, as a kid, you totally related to it, even though it was half of it is over your head.
Yeah, it's smart and witty, but without being smarmy and sarcastic the way that, you know, a lot of modern stuff is. Like, there was that Spirited movie that came out with Will Ferrell and Ryan Reynolds.
And I watched that.
It's fine.
This year, it's
fine. I missed the emotion to it. Like, it's got all the smarminess and the like cracking jokes. But like when you want me to feel and you want me to be emotionally attached to these people, I wasn't there. And I think that's its big hang up.
And I don't know. I keep coming back to this. The one Will Ferrell film I like is Elf.
Yeah.
I'm not a big Will Ferrell.
Yeah, I'm not huge on it. They keep doing this thing with Will Ferrell movies where they give him romantic leads. Like they keep forcing him into romances in these movies, and
he's not good at it.
He's not really a great romantic partner.
He's not believable.
No, and it's just like
I'm not saying what he's like in real life, but in the
I think it's an odd thing with Will Ferrell movies nowadays where it's like, well, he's got to be in a romance situation. It's just like, does he? Do we need that?
Yeah,
and I know Elf has a little bit too, but that's probably
it's probably
the one part of Elf people care about the least. Yeah. I think that subplot is the one that people are like, oh yeah, that's right, Zooey Deschanel's character's in that. But that's a nice movie. Maybe that's what we're going to replace food porn with, is us talking about the latest films.
maybe. Who knows?
Next time we'll talk about Avatar. Lori, you have an absolutely great holiday season. You have a great Christmas, a great New Year's, and just a great 2023.
Yeah, you have a great. And hopefully all of you had a great, and we'll
have a hopefully nice, all of you out there are amazing, having a great time
because
in 2023.
Honestly, 2020 was bad. 2021
was
much
weird.
Better. 2022 is also kind of weird. So, like, maybe 2023 is it.
Let's I'm pumped for...
I'm optimistic.
You know, and that's how you should go into every year. Optimistic.
But I tend to be optimistic. So
that's
I'll try
true.
To keep you there. That would be the challenge.
you like Malort. So clearly Lori is the optimist in this arrangement.
Yeah. That's true.
All right.
Anyway.
Well, thank you, as always, to my co-host. Thank you to our wonderful guests. Thank you to our wonderful producer. But most importantly, thank you to all of you, our wonderful listeners. Thank you for listening to a tremendous, tremendous conversation. I hope you thought it was true. I thought it was tremendous.
Yes. And not our conversation necessarily, but the conversation that created
our conversation partners.
With
hopefully
our
you thought they were tremendous.
With Victoria and Alex.
Yeah.
Because that
we're
was
okay. Me and Lori, we're fine. Our guests are tremendous.
Our guests are tremendous. Indeed.
One more time, thanks for listening. And as always, keep cooking into 2023, y'all. Keep cooking. Keep cooking in that new year.
Y'all.
Y'all.